Well, it's that time of year again, the time when you wonder whether it'll be you or your unsuspecting teammate who runs up the Utah Olympic Park Hill in a tutu or some such costume. It's the annual community event Running with Ed, one of the most successful and certainly the most fun fundraisers, and I would say Tour de Suds goes in that category as well, one of my favorites,
yes.
In town. It raises several $100,000 for the Park City Education Foundation, and you and your team have just a few days left to register for this May 21st event. Joining me in the studio to go over what you need to know are Jen Billow and Sean Beard. Welcome to the Mountain Life.
Thanks, morning, Tim.
It's good to have you on again.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Seems like we do this every year.
Oh, yeah. It's surprising that it's here already.
I feel the same way. I did run up that hill to the Olympic Park a few years ago.
You did?
In a tutu.
In a tutu.
Yeah.
So you know personally.
I think that reference was meant
was
for
meant
me.
For you. We've had a few people do that, although that leg has changed a little bit since you've run it.
Well, tell us about the changes that people can expect this year.
Yeah, there's some really exciting changes. So first of all, we want to say register by Friday because the price does go up. So it's the last day of regular registration, and we know you're all waiting out there because it's Park City, and people wait to the last minute, right?
Do they still wait on this one?
You know, it's funny. We Ultra gives away 50 pair of shoes to the first 50 teams that sign up to the team captain. So we get this really quick flurry right at the beginning, and then it's really slow until the last 2 days of registration. So yes, people do wait, but they have that, you know, they're waiting to see who's on what team and who's going to run and what they're going to wear. But get your team registered. The Olympic Park, so last year there was all this construction, so you couldn't run up and over as we had it in the past. So we ran up the trail. There's also the new trail there, the RTS trail. So Millennium goes into that, you know, where people have been Nordic skiing. So you run up trail instead of on the road, which is, you know, nice on the old knees. And then you end up at the base of the jumps. So it's a little bit shorter. It's a much prettier run. And then there's the new leg four, where you can choose to run up the stairs along the Nordic jump.
Ouch.
Or take the chairlift.
Okay.
So
seems like an easy choice.
You know, surprisingly, most people did the stairs.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. And then you run down to canyons. You know, it's the same as before. So those two legs are a little different. Skullcandy and UOP put it on an awesome exchange. Skullcandy was talking to me about some of the surprises. They're thinking they might have a contest where as you leave, they're going to give you a balloon and you have to blow it up as you're going up the stairs.
Oh,
and then if you do, you can hand it to at the Chesley Exchange at the canyons.
Do you get a time bonus for that?
You get a prize. Oh. So I don't know what that is.
Will there be medics on the stairs?
there will be medics at the top.
Oh, how could you could definitely make that harder.
Yeah. So I guess you can wait till you're running downhill. So that's a big change. And then another big change is you know, we used to have the exchange at City Park and then either at Treasure or McPolin, because there's the two schools right next to each other. So that was exchange 7 and 8. And they both kind of, they didn't like having to trade each year to get City Park. So we're gonna go right past City Park and there'll be an exchange. You'll run to Treasure, then you'll run through Round Valley and come back to McPolin. So there'll be two exchanges right next to each other, and that will be a huge party, I'm sure. And you mentioned Tour de Suds, and I think another popular thing is that we also have Suds at the end of the race, and PC Brewery is our new beer sponsor.
Well, that's always a good idea.
Yeah, so we're very, very excited.
You know, it occurs to me that some of these events, and Tour de Suds is a perfect example, the course has changed through the years, and what I realized at one point was that the course didn't really matter.
Right.
And so does the course really matter with Running for Ed? Because mm-hmm. it seems as though this has taken on a life of its own and a certain amount of momentum of its own. And mm-hmm. people don't really care mm-hmm. if they're running some people probably don't care whether they've got a 2 mile leg, a 3 mile leg, a 4 mile leg. They just want to be out there with a team enjoying
right.
this event.
Absolutely.
Tim, all that matters is the party after.
And that's right, the party after and the costumes.
Yeah, and it is a great party after, and your family can come and join the teams if they're not running in it. We have stuff for all the kids, for the adults. Park City Brewery is going to have our beer garden this year. It's just a great time. It's one of those Park City events the race and the party after that is not to be missed.
And so given that it's a Park City event, it now has a history, there's success, you raise money and a substantial amount of money mm-hmm. every year. Mm-hmm. Do you still, as the organizers, find yourselves a little anxious as you get into that that time frame where we are right now?
Oh,
your
yeah.
first deadline coming up for the
kidding?
Discounted prices.
Yes, yes, there is always that. I think every year, you know, we're picking up the phone and emailing the team captains who registered last year and saying, we don't see you yet. And they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to register. So there always is that anxiety. We do need, you know, every team to sign up. We raised $250,000 at this race. We can't do it if teams don't sign up. And I think people hear the numbers and go, oh, well, you know, maybe I won't do it this year. But don't. You'll miss out. It's so much fun. As you said, the course doesn't – I mean, it's beautiful. But Sean's team name is Five Fat Guys. So I don't know if they care about the course.
We don't care so much about the course. And being the team captain, I get the first leg, which is only 1.3 miles. So you want to sign up and be the captain.
Yes.
So you get to pick your – legs.
And what other legs are you doing, Sean? I mean, you've got the first leg, which is the shortest.
Yes.
Did you also pick up the other short legs?
Oh, absolutely. Like Park City to Parley's Park. You get to go through the barn. It's beautiful.
That's a beautiful leg. That's really pretty. The Jeremy Ranch to Ecker Hill, that is actually the second leg. That's the shortest one. You might be referring to that one. That's super short. And at the end of it, at the Ecker Hill Exchange, there will be llamas this year. So it's running with Ed. It's weird. It's fun. You never know what to expect. And at that exchange, Cotopaxi is providing backpacks for fundraising prizes. They make clothes from llama wool, I guess you would call it. And so they have llamas. And so they're bringing them to Ecker. So if you're running that short exchange, at the end of it, you can get a selfie with a llama, say, I ran the shortest leg and got to see a llama at the end.
And as crazy as this event is and all the fun stuff that's going on around it, it is a race, and for competitive runners, you can make it as challenging as you want.
Mm-hmm.
We have individuals that run the entire 38 miles, so you can have a team of five, and everybody runs two legs, and that's a challenge. But if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Right, and the other four fat guys.
I spoke with one this morning. He said, I'm guilty of not registering yet.
Okay, so we're out of time. Okay. So quickly, just give us the timeline again. We've got a deadline coming up this Friday.
Yes, this Friday. So register by midnight to get the regular team pricing. You don't need to have your full team. You just got to purchase that team and register.
And the event happens?
May 21st. Put that on your calendar. Captain's meeting is next Thursday at Backcountry, and you can go to runningwithed.com to register. And if the website is down at the moment, X Mission is having some problems, just keep trying throughout the day. They've promised us it'll be back up soon.
Outstanding. Good luck on this wonderful event, and look forward to hearing how it goes at the end.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City branch. We have been part of this community since 1998 as a local town bank. We take pride in giving back by supporting KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have branches in Heber City, Midway, and Park City on Deer Valley Drive. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Irene from Chateau Recovery, happy to support KPCW. Chateau works with adults struggling with co-occurring substance and mental health disorders. We utilize traditional and non-traditional approaches to empower clients. Information at 866-808-4160 or chateaurecovery.com. Addiction is a disease. Recovery is a choice.
Can you really change your life in 40 days? With a combination of daily yoga, meditation, practicing the food plan that you know is right, and many other elements of personal transformation, our guest, Sherry Fisher, truly believes you can. It's Tadasana's Yoga's 40 Days to Personal Revolution program, and it begins on Monday. Sherry's here to talk over the program, and you have just a few days left to sign up. Good morning, Sherry, and welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning. Thank you.
Why don't you just run through the nuts and bolts of what you're doing here with this program?
All right. This program is called 40 Days to Personal Revolution, and it's based on a book written by Baron Baptiste. And as we know, the Baptiste Institute is here in Park City. And
he's a local in Salt Lake, isn't he? Doesn't he live down in Salt Lake?
Yeah, as far as I know, yes.
Yeah, because he's done a number of workshops through the years up here.
And he has a wonderful program. Many of the yoga instructors that I have worked with have gone through his training, so very good. But this is based on one of his books called 40 Days to Personal Revolution, and Tadasana Yoga Studio has done this over the last 5-6 years. As you know, I'm new to town. But so it's a gathering of people who come together to work together for 40 days through this program. So there is a book, so people are reading the book. They come in every Monday night for 1 hour, 7 to 8 p.m., and it's where we are doing the workshop. So it's not doing yoga. It's actually talking through what we learned about during the week's reading. And this program really combines several different aspects. One is a yoga practice, and that can be done inside the studio, outside the studio. But I like to remind people that yoga is a lot more than just physical postures. I've had some questions of people who say, well, what if I can't do yoga? I still think they'll get a lot from this program. And then there's also a meditation component, looking at the balance of your diet and nutrition. And I think the strength of the program through Tadasana comes because we're working together as a group, and there's quite a strength when you're able to do that. So we will meet over the next 6 Mondays from 7 to 8 to go through all of the principles that are talked about in the book, a lot of excavating questions to get you a little bit deeper into some of your own thoughts, some of your own behavior patterns, to help you maybe get rid of some things that are no longer serving you, and maybe help you to also embrace some new habits to take you forward.
Is there a target audience? I ask that because is this kind of a entry to these concepts? Is it, you know, a beginner, intermediate, or would it apply to people who have, been practicing these elements in their lives for years?
This is for beginners. If you have ever read any of Baron Baptiste's books, they're very basic, very welcoming. It talks about the principles to get you started and then helps you to step into it. So I would encourage people, even if you've never stepped onto a yoga mat, never even attempted meditation, this is something that will help you to do that. And really, I think that the people who are most attracted to a program like this are either anticipating some change in their life, or they're already going through some changes in their life and they're looking for different ways to approach that change, gaining new perspective, maybe learning more about themselves and different strengths that they have to help them to get through that.
Isn't that an interesting aspect? And I'm sure you see this a lot, where people turn to yoga, meditation, when they're faced with a challenge, as opposed to what I would say is, that's almost being forced from challenge to look at something that is new and maybe change the way you've done things, as opposed to voluntarily deciding without a crisis or a challenge in your life to embrace new practice. Do you find that that's the case?
Yeah, I think a lot of times we as a society go around on autopilot. And if things are okay, we're okay with okay. And that can become troublesome even in and of itself. And if you don't listen to that nice quiet tapping, that there may be some opportunity for change, or something maybe is headed in the wrong direction, sometimes it takes that whack on the head, which is what you refer to as crisis, to finally open your eyes, bring you off autopilot and say, okay, what's going on here? So it would be great to have people come into change more from a choice rather than from crisis. But people come to yoga from all different angles. Sometimes people come in and say, I just want to get in great physical shape. And then they stay for other reasons. They may get the washboard abs, but they also might find that they're understanding more about themselves. I have a saying when I am teaching yoga, it's the way we do anything is the way we do everything. And so if you see patterns that show up as you're working through your yoga practice, they are probably reflections of things that are happening outside of the studio. And that encourages people, and through this program, through the book, he talks about excavating questions, things that help you to dig a little deeper, to come off of autopilot and start asking some questions, start looking at some of the truths and some of the thoughts that you've held for a long time that really are driving your behavior, and start to ask you to peel away the layers and update those truths. Are they still true for you? Does it still work for you to follow that principle now, with 30 more years underneath your belt, with a lot more experience, a lot more education, and what you know now about your internal truth? So I think that the beauty of this program is it starts to ask those questions and helps you to open your eyes and get off autopilot and start moving towards growth.
And getting off autopilot, is that a component, or maybe it's the definition of mindfulness?
It's absolutely the definition of mindfulness. And through the meditation component, that's one of the things that we encourage people to step into stillness. Now, when I say daily meditation, sometimes people will step back and go, I can't even sit still for 30 seconds. It's a very small, you can do it for 3 minutes. And even next week, we are offering an additional workshop on Wednesday that's included in the 40 days program. And I'll be leading that. It's on mindfulness meditation. And so I'll be talking about the history of meditation, the benefits of it, and different things, different obstacles that you may face as you're trying to step into a new meditation practice, and different ways to approach that. Meditation is simple, but that doesn't mean that it's always easy. So we want to help people to feel comfortable in taking that step.
And you mentioned something a minute ago about how, you know, we reach a stage in life where we're carrying our experience with us, and you could call that wisdom, a certain amount of wisdom that you acquire through the years. Do you find that your clients or the interest that comes from people is at a certain age group? Is there a demographic component to this? Do millennials like this sort of program, or is it really people who have acquired some degree of wisdom?
I have seen people from all different age groups come in.
Not that millennials don't have wisdom.
Right, no, they have their
you
own
millennials
wisdom.
Out there.
We all have wisdom, and I do believe that. So I think that it's a wide range of people that will be coming to this. And I heard a quote the other day, I probably won't get it exactly right, but education is learning something new every day, and wisdom is releasing something that you thought that you knew every day. And so I think that wisdom really can come at any point in your life. As you start to open your eyes, as you start to update, observe yourself in different situations, update those truths or those thoughts that you use, sometimes subconsciously, to guide you through how you interact with people, how you think about yourself, how you feel about yourself. And that's the kind of wisdom that we're looking to uncover and unearth through our program, through Tadasana, through this 40 days program.
And how did you get involved with Tadasana? I know we've talked with you before on the show, but now you've been here a little bit longer. You're integrating into the community, obviously. You've kind of found a place that you really resonate, and you've found your tribe at Tadasana, I would assume. I'm making an assumption there. Maybe you want to elaborate on that. But why Baron Baptiste program and Tadasana?
When I first moved to Park City, which was last fall, we moved close to Tadasana. It's also a warm power vinyasa studio, which is where I taught in Colorado, was a similar studio. So I am used to that format. And what I found there was a very welcoming community. Both the instructors and the yogis who come and practice have been very welcoming, open arms. I have felt very comfortable there, both teaching and practicing. And so I think I've found my home. I have been teaching at other locations here in Park City, but I really, really enjoy Tadasana. Baron Baptiste, I first came across his book, Journey into Power, when I was doing my teacher training in 2010, and I was very impressed with that. I have not yet met him, but I have a feeling that I will at some point. He has a new book coming out. I believe it's called Imperfectly Perfect. It's coming out in May, and I'm excited to read that, perhaps a follow-on book study. But I just think he's been such a leader in the field, and his books, I think, have been very inspirational to a lot of people. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's the center of our 40 days program. It's a very good program.
And you do other things as well, don't you? Life coaching?
Uh-huh. I'm a life coach. I do workshops and presentations. I do some team building workshops in organizations. And I love what I do. I like to help people see their growth. I like to help them to be able to move forward and create different perspectives so that they see things differently, look internally and find new strengths. And it's very empowering. I have witnessed amazing change throughout. I've been doing life coaching for 8 years, and it's been a wonderful road.
And I'm curious about that perspective from the view of a life coach that you have chosen to, or you've been attracted to. There's so much information out there with regard to mindfulness, yoga, meditation. the resources and the people who are presenting like Baron Baptiste. So then to see it come down to our local level with you, a local representative who connects with that and then wants to present and broaden it out. How did you make that determination? Because there must be a whole bunch of different programs or options for someone like you to engage with and try to broaden out into the community.
I think one of the most important things for me when I'm looking for a studio, when I'm looking at different philosophies and resources, is it has to ring true for me. I also believe that certain things come across my path, and if it rings true for me, I get excited to be able to share that with other people. Last time I was on the air with you, we talked about I just completed my master's degree, and it's in transpersonal studies. So there were a lot of different resources that I was exposed to at that time. And I find that if it rings true for me, I think it rings true for a lot of people. And then through my instructing yoga, through my life coaching, I'm able to share those principles with other people. And that's exciting to me. That's my purpose here. And that's what really compels me to move forward.
So Sherry, we're out of time, but the details again on the 40 Days to Personal Revolution program, how can people sign up and find out more about it if they've heard this interview and are interested?
Absolutely. Please go to the Tadasana website. It's hotyogaparkcity.com, and it's under special events. You can sign up. You can also you can give me a call personally if you'd like. My number is 970-260-3551. I'm happy to answer any questions or stop by the studio. We'd be happy to help you out.
Great. Well, good luck with the program, and it's nice to have you back on the mountain life.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Hi, this is Sean Gobin, General Manager of Park Meadows Country Club and supporter of KPCW. Park Meadows is Park City's in-town country club, offering year-round amenities like Jack Nicklaus Signature Golf, Mountain Club at Deer Valley, social events, pool, and fitness center. Golf and social memberships are available at 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
Well, what's the root cause of happiness, and is it even possible to identify and define? Those are the questions about happiness I wonder about and was fortunate to be able to ask director Adam Schell, who just happened to be in town for a ski vacation a couple of weeks ago. Adam has spent the last 3 years traveling the country, collecting 400 interviews on the topic for his latest documentary film, Pursuing Happiness. Adam joined me to tape this interview and share his thoughts and experiences while pursuing happiness. Adam Schell, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. This is
great. Well, it's good to have you here. I know you're here on vacation.
I am, indeed. Yeah. And what an awesome vacation it is.
Good week to pick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've gotten snow every night, fresh powder in the morning. Yeah. It's like the dream.
And you board. You don't ski?
I do. I board. I never learned to ski. My parents weren't skiers. And so growing up, I only learned to board because my friends were doing it. It was like the new thing. And so my friends dragged me out on the hill, literally dragged me up to the top of the mountain and said, have a nice day. And they took off. And I literally had to figure out how to get down. And
well, good timing.
Yeah.
Good timing on the week you're here and good timing to be on the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, looking at the title of your film, and first I guess I should tell people that you're a director and a producer and a writer, and this is your third film?
This is my third film, yeah.
Yeah, so let's get into the nuts and bolts of that a little bit, because I have so many things that I want to ask you about this topic. It's such
Absolutely.
A big topic, and there's many related themes to happiness. But looking at the title of Pursuing Happiness, initially I was a little bit thrown until I started to investigate and found out that you had been Well, why don't you tell us how you were drawn to this theme, and then the Pursuing Happiness is really about you making the film.
Yeah, it actually is, and I'm glad you brought that up, which I'll get into. The theme itself, the subject, kind of came about in several different ways. The first of which was the last film I made called Finding Craftland was about a good friend of mine who literally spent his whole, like all his free time searching out joy, filling his life with things that just bring him joy, going riding roller coasters with his son. And, you know, he loves Disney and all these things that a lot of us associate with children. he brings them into his life. He's like, these are awesome. I'm just going to do them. And so that was what that film was about.
So that was an immersion into this place called Craft Land, which was a joyful place.
Exactly. Which exactly. I mean, a place where his home that he has like Dumbo in the living room and Bob's Big Boy in the front hall and stuff like that. So what the thing that hit me the most was when we tour festivals, we toured about 75 festivals with that film. People would always say, thank you so much for making this film. It's making me think about joy and happiness in my life and what I can do to, you know, bring more joy into my life. And that always stuck with me because, I mean, what a powerful thing to hear that something you did is making somebody else think about making their life happier. And I was like, I want to do this on a bigger level and not just make a film about one guy because, you know, you might love this guy, you might hate him, and, you know, usually for the same reason, but that's what it is. And so I was like, if there's got to be so many different ways that we all search out happiness and joy. There's so many different things we do, and they aren't all collecting Disney figures and bobbleheads. They're all kinds of different things, and that's what I want to explore is how do we find happiness? What is happiness? How does that enter our lives? And then at the same time that that was happening, the industry of happiness is just blowing up everywhere. So you get, you know, articles, books, magazines, research, all this information that we've never had before. And I was like, there's something here. I want to know more.
And so your pursuit of happiness was actually literally you making the film. You pursued this thought and you pursued it through referrals. And tell us about the referrals, how you got those, and a little bit about the Kickstarter and how you kind of came to fund the whole project.
Well, the title of the film, Pursuing Happiness, kind of has a double meaning.
Right.
Because on one part, it's me pursuing happiness. What we did was we traveled the country looking for the happiest people in America. Because to me, they have the answers. They're the professionals. They're the ones that know the most about happiness. Oftentimes they don't know it. They don't know that they know it, but they really have all the insight. So what we did is we did a Kickstarter campaign because, you know, when you're looking for the happiest people in America, there's a lot of people. I don't know that many people. So what we did was we figured out that by asking this question, who's the happiest person you know, it really was a great filter because people just wanted to refer their friends and people that were genuinely happy. So we did a Kickstarter campaign asking people not only for the donations, but refer us to the happiest people you know. And we got hundreds of referrals all over the country from people we had never met before, which kind of laid out the map for us, right? And so it was really that double entendre thing comes back where it was me pursuing happy people to figure out what the secrets to happiness are so that I could learn how to pursue happiness correctly.
So let's explore that a little more deeply. The whole referral and the filtering that gave you, did you say the 300 happy people that started this journey?
Exactly. Yeah.
And how do you feel about that? Was that a good way to do it? Because, I mean, you know, you're sort of then looking at a select group because they've been self-filtered by friends or by someone. They've been categorized as happy people.
Yeah. We all do that. I mean, I think we all do that in our lives. We can go through all of our friends and say, is that person happy or not happy? You know, you could do that for a lot of things. We do it automatically. We do it for how wealthy is each one of my friends. You know, that's something we probably all have in our head. But when you start thinking about it, happiness and not happy, it's a filter that you kind of, you know, in your head who's happy and who's not happy, but we don't necessarily think about that on a daily basis. So when you put that question out to people, they really start to filter that through and go, oh, you know what? Oh, I know who it is. It's my friend Julie. She is so, you know, and then they start talking about them. And then rarely did we ever get any people that were like, oh, you're not that happy, you know? And we'd say to people, oh, you're the happiest person that Bob knows. And they'd be like, really? And then after 5 minutes, we'd be like, yeah, oh, yeah, you really. So, it was a great way of doing it because that filters what you need, right? Because when you're making a film, you really want genuine characters. You want people who really fit the bill. And how do you figure out who the happiest people in the country are? I mean, that's a tough task right in and of itself. And so that filter really helped us to narrow that down.
So I'm assuming that you set off in quest and pursuit of these 300 happy people, and you find out that they are, by and large, happy people.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a superficial classification, because it's not that they're happy people, but the real question, I would think, is why are they happy people?
Well, absolutely.
And I'm wondering about the initial intention of the film, or maybe your vision for this film.
Yeah.
And did it start with one vision or intention and then morph into something a little different when you started to interview these 300 people?
Yeah, no, it definitely did. I mean, at the very beginning, I wanted to make a film that was all happiness. You know, when you say happiness, you think smiles and color and candy and happy people jumping. You know, if you just search it, Google images for happiness, you see people running on the beach and dancing in the sunset and things like that. And that's what I originally thought. Oh, happiness. Let's go document a whole bunch of that so that as we're sitting here, we're laughing, we're smiling throughout the whole film. And I quickly realized after starting to talk with these people that might be this image of happiness that we all have, but it's not the road to happiness that we need to understand. And what I was really trying to figure out is how to get to that point, and not just get there, but stay there, live there. You know, we want to spend most of our lives happy. That's what we're all trying to do. So by finding these people that have gone through some of the worst things, it really opened my mind to say, oh, this film isn't just about those happy moments, that running on the beach and dancing in the sunset. It's about the journey to happiness. And some of the biggest experts in that are the people who've gone through the worst things. Take Gloria, for example, who is a 28-year-old lawyer who got diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And by all means, every one of us thinks about that and goes, oh, my God, that's the worst thing that could happen to me. It's a death sentence. My life is over. She took that as, no, I'm going to make this the best thing that ever happened to me, turned it around and said, cancer, you know, you're not going to ruin my life. I'm going to take what you give me and turn it into greatness. And she did. And she's an inspiration. She said to me, you know, I said, how much has your life changed since the diagnosis? And she's like, oh, it's incredible. My life is completely different. She said, if you gave me a magic wand and said, with this magic wand, I could take away your cancer, take away your diagnosis, all the pain, all the surgeries, everything that's happened to you since this diagnosis. But with it, you'd take away all the people that I've met, my relationship with my doctor, everything that's happened to me and everyone who I've affected since, I'd tell you, do not wave that wand.
And that's a profound place to come to for Gloria.
Absolutely.
And I would think it was probably somewhat profound for you to experience that through Gloria.
Yeah.
And was there a tipping point for that change in intention and vision about the film and, you know, your end product and what you were trying to deliver to whatever audience? And maybe even the audience changed a little bit, because the people who are going to watch 45 minutes of jumping on the beach, you know, joyfully are different than the people who are going to listen to Gloria's story and come away with a profound understanding, or a differently profound understanding. So was there a moment? Was it talking to Gloria, or was it a culmination of things?
It was a culmination of things. You know, when you start going through and interviewing people, you know, a lot of times we'd get interviewees, you know, referrals for people that had gone through stuff like Gloria did. For example, we had John Lawson, great guy, now a really good friend of mine, lost both of his arms in an electrical accident when he was 30. Now, this guy was a professional piano player. He had studied piano for over half of his life, and this was one of his big things in life. And here he is with losing that ability. And he's gone through so many other things, but just the best attitude about it and always looking up. And, you know, he's a real inspiration. And so after meeting some of these people and realizing, wow, they really have the best stories. They have the most to share. They have the deepest experiences and the most knowledge. Because what I really came to realize is that you can't really experience happiness without also experiencing sadness and, you know, depression and fear and all these things. And those are the things that we really have to focus on if you want to be happy. And I don't mean focus on them in like, let's pay so much attention to them when they're happening, but you really have to learn how to manage them, you know? And once you really manage the fears and the sadnesses and the tragedies in life, when you can manage those successfully, then happiness is just, it's right there.
I'm wondering about, you're a storyteller.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering about the relationship of telling a narrative mm-hmm. with what Gloria and what was the other fellow's name?
John.
John.
Yeah.
Distilled down. I mean, there must be something that you have seen these various people distill down to some crucial element. Maybe they're predisposed to optimism. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've learned that you can choose happiness because yeah. it's in the present moment. But they then have to be able to convey that. So I'm wondering if you noticed a relationship between people who could distill it in their lives and live it, but weren't necessarily the best storytellers and didn't fit in as well to your film as some of the others who were great storytellers or had a great story to tell.
Right. You know, definitely that's something that we focused on a lot. We interviewed 400 people for this film. So we had a lot of stories at our, you know, at our disposal to put this thing together. Only about 25, 26 people appear in the film. Some of the stories are longer, like Gloria and John. Some of them are really short, like, you know, 30 seconds or so. But yeah, I mean, we definitely, it's a film that's meant to entertain as well as educate and inspire. So the best stories are definitely the ones, you know, that were the most compelling. But generally, you know, it's hard to say that they're not necessarily the best storytellers themselves, but they do have great stories and they do have great ideas and great understanding of what they're going through. And I think that's really important, is to understand and to accept what you're going through. And when you get to that point of acceptance and understanding, I think you just have a way of being able to convey it that's just natural. And that's really what I was looking for. And this goes back to something you pointed out earlier, which is part of the style of this film is really, let's just live in these moments. You know, when we made it, it was just me and my producer on the road. We had two cameras. I carried a camera and I did all the interviewing. And my producer would, you know, interject with a question here, you know, and he was a lot of the time filming the interviewee and, you know, this whole experience. So it was, we're all on camera. I want to bring the audience into the film with me so that while you're going through this film and you're watching it and you're really experiencing the journey that I experienced, because it really was an amazing learning experience of going around and just meeting all these different people that all had something really unique in common.
I was going to ask you, yeah. I mean, we touched on how you your vision and your intention changed, but I'm thinking right. that part of that process was you as a person were changed by oh. what you were involved in.
Yes.
This pursuit
Absolutely.
Of happiness changed you as a human being.
Absolutely. I mean, it's made me a lot more accepting, a lot more understanding. I mean, one of the biggest things that I take away from the process and the film, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who have seen it as well, is it really makes you stop and say, oh my gosh, I really need to enjoy every moment for the little things, even if it's just, you know, getting a really good cup of coffee or sitting here and talking with you and enjoying the conversation. It's every moment is part of our life. And if we don't really focus on every moment, we miss it. And one of the things that Gloria says at the end of the film, which is just amazing to hear from such a young person, is I hate it when people say people's lives were cut short. She goes, it's just, it's not realizing we all think we're guaranteed 80 years and we're not. We don't know how long our lives are. And if we all live like we're guaranteed 80 years, that means we have this whole runway of time out there to accomplish things or to do things or to experience things. And if your runway is all of a sudden shortened by a diagnosis or, you know, fear of something, you all of a sudden start packing things in more. But we don't need to live that compressed way. We can live, you know, with just normal lives of saying, I'm going to do everything that brings me joy on a daily basis instead of waiting for some future point in time when I accomplish something big, when I win the lottery or I make a lot of money or I sell this or whatever it is. Why not have fun now? Why not enjoy life now?
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Adam Schell. He's the writer, director, and producer of Pursuing Happiness. Well, Adam, that living in the present moment and mm-hmm. understanding the yeah. the importance and significance of being present is kind of cliche. And it's something we've heard, you know, for thousands of years from philosophies, from religion. The Dalai Lama, he speaks all the time about the connection to happiness and living in the present moment. Many of our, you know, spiritual gurus these days, that's a very, well, that's something we've all been exposed to.
Right.
You obviously had been exposed to it.
Of course.
But you had a change as a person from this experience of intimately connecting with the subjects of your film. And I'm wondering about what you want your audience to leave the theater with. Will they get a snackable bit of what you lived for a number of years?
Absolutely.
And will they be changed in maybe a less significant way? But who knows? Maybe as significant a way. And was the idea to present this in a different medium to a different audience?
Yes, absolutely. You know, that definitely is the goal. The goal of my goal with making this film was to present an experience and a set of people that will provide inspiration in a real meaningful way. I mean, we go through life hearing these cliches all the time. They're everywhere. You can buy them on coffee mugs. You put them up on your wall. But do we really live them? Do we really get that understanding? It's like there's a difference. I always said that this film to me was a piece of intellectual knowledge, you know, or data combined with an emotional experience. And to me, that's what creates those aha moments. You go through school and you learn so much stuff, but do you really understand it? And then one day you're somewhere and you're like, oh my God, that's what they were talking about, right? It just all of a sudden clicks, because when you're in an environment, you can smell a smell or you hear a sound. You just feel the presence of something. It has so much more meaning than when you're just reading something in a book. And so I wanted to marry those two ideas, and I hope that's what I've accomplished, and I think I have, is taking these emotional experiences and allowing you to sit with Gloria for a minute and feel her pain. I mean, we went to chemotherapy with her where they were injecting her with stuff and sticking her with needles, and you see this happening to her, and yet she's sitting there with a smile on her face eating Jell-O, you know, and dancing on the bed during chemo sessions. And it's like you just, you know, you get a sense of it that you don't from reading these books, and that's what I set out to do, and that's what I think the film really does accomplish.
And what do you think it is in your subjects, the 300 or 400 that you interviewed, that sets them apart from other people? Is there a genetic DNA predisposition to optimism? I used that before.
Right.
But, you know, there are people who seem to come, their come from is a place of hope, or their come from is a place of fear, and there's, you know, there's a place for everyone in between on that spectrum.
Yeah.
Are these people clustered toward a come from of hope as opposed to fear, which I think would make them more optimistic?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely scientific data that points to what they call a baseline for happiness, a set point. You know, let's say there's a scale of 0 to 10, you know, and 10 being happy and 0 being depressed. Somewhere in there is your baseline, right? It's where if all else is normal, you're going to kind of fall to this level. And some people out there, we met this guy, Randy, for example, in Pittsburgh, who has taken his home and created, you know, this wonderland of garbage, basically, that he repurposes and turns into art. And it's this amazing place in Pittsburgh that you just go and you see tons of color. He is probably one of the happiest people we met genetically. You know, he's that guy that was probably born at a 10. But that doesn't mean that if I'm born at a 5, I can't live above my baseline. And I think that is what all these people have in common, is they've figured out how to live above that baseline, whatever their baseline is. And we did meet people who said to us, look, I'm probably about a 4 happy normally, but I've really had to go through and train myself to get to live at around a 7 and understand the little things that I can do and the little ways I can approach every moment and every experience to shed off like a little annoyances and anger and fear and things like that. And those are things that take practice. And there are practical things you can do on a daily basis to understand them, to recognize them when they come into your life, and then to know how to handle them so that you can live above those baselines. So while we did find people that were at a 10, we also found people that were at 2, but were living up above it.
And this whole, you know, in our society, we're told that you can purchase happiness. I mean, we get bombarded with that message
of course.
All the time.
Yeah.
Did you encounter that?
Oh yeah. I mean, we did a lot of, you know, that's one of the things, you know.
Deconstructing the myth.
Oh yeah, deconstructing the myth. We spoke to Professor Norton at Harvard, who he wrote a book called Happy Money. There was, how I found him is there was an article he wrote in the New York Times several years back that was all about, you know, I think he said in that at that time it was about $75,000 a year is all you need to be happy in this country for a family of four. And that's about the average. I think it's up to around 90 these days. But if you make that much, anything you make beyond that won't increase your happiness. It will just literally, you'll stay the same. The relationship completely falls off. He has this great moment in the film where he says, you know, we spoke to millionaires. Let's say you make $1 million a year. And we said, how much more would it take you to be a perfect 10 in happiness? How much more money? And they would say three times as much. And he's like, that's funny because we also have the people who make $3 million a year and they also say three times as much. So it's kind of that never ending cycle that, you know, it's like you can always want more money, but there's not really a good, you know, equation that fits more money equals more happiness. And then he does go on to talk about if you do have money, what the things you can do. And it's usually revolving around spending that money to make somebody else happy, you know, and that's when you really, because the one of the true connectors to happiness is about community and relationships and feeling like you have a purpose, like you have a place. And when you can do something for somebody else that makes a big difference in their life, like, you know, helping them out with a financial problem, or let's say, you know, they have medical problems and you're like, you know, I'm going to help you. Or even if it's just like, hey, I'm going to buy you a cup of coffee. Anywhere along that spectrum of very big to very small, it does make other people happy. And that making other people happy is what really makes you
happy. I'm glad you brought that up because that purpose and service mm-hmm. to others, whether it's a community or another person or in a relationship. I'm wondering, when you looked at the people that you interviewed, did anything jump out that surprised you? Did you go, oh my gosh, we have a whole bunch of politicians, or we have a whole bunch of philanthropists, or we have a whole bunch of caregivers, or was there anything that in that group that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there a large portion of the people were very selfless. I mean, you're talking people that were very, and I don't mean selfless as in they didn't pay attention to themselves. They always took care of themselves. And I think that's really important, is to take care of yourself. But they also were very concerned with other people. And I think that's hugely important because, you know, one of the things that I learned that is presented early on in the film, the film's broken down into three acts where I basically ask one major question per act. And act one is, why happiness? Why does it exist? Why do we feel this emotion? You know, and that's kind of was one of the basis points for me is like, okay, well, let's understand what this thing is before we understand why we want it or how to get it. And why happiness exists is because as humans, we're not the strongest animals. We don't have the biggest claws. We don't have the sharpest teeth. We're not the biggest or strongest. But what we do have is we have each other. And when we bond together, that's our survival mechanism. So it really about creating those communities is why happiness exists. And it's what it's for. And so when you want more happiness, just putting yourself into a communal situation where you're doing for the community, for the better of other people, that's automatically going to bring you happiness because biologically, that's what we're programmed to do.
Selflessness can actually become a selfish act,
absolutely,
but in a positive way.
Exactly. That's a great statement. That's a great statement. Yes.
Well, now tell us about the film. You've been to a bunch of film festivals last year.
Yep.
And you're getting good reception from people.
Great reviews, and great reception.
What's going to happen? It's going to be released?
Yeah, we're releasing on a platform called Tug, which is TUGG.com. And what they do is it's online theatrical distribution platform, not only online, but on demand. So basically, the reason why I like this is because I want to be able to theatrically bring this film to all sorts of different communities around the world so that you don't just have to go to LA and New York to see it in a theater. And right back to what I said about community, this film, I think, really has a stronger benefit when you can see it with other people. And then those conversations that will come out of watching the film can happen right there in an organic setting. You know, maybe there's a Q&A afterwards. I'll be trying to attend as many of these as I possibly can. But then not only that, other people, the hosts will, you know, hopefully have a Q&A and people can just start the conversation. So that's why this platform is so perfect for.
And if people want to find out about the TUG platform and more about your film, do you have a website they can go to?
Yeah, go to pursuinghappiness.com. Or we're also on Facebook at Pursuing Happiness, the movie.
Well, Adam, I hope you enjoy the rest of your ski vacation or riding vacation here in Park City. You did hit a good week, and it's nice to have you on the show today. And best of luck with the film.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
Well, I want to thank our underwriters for The Mountain Life, the doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, Park City Mountain, and Chateau Recovery. Also, our guest today, we spoke with the folks Jen Billow and Sean Beard from Running with Ed. We also talked with Sherry Fisher about her personal revolution program at Tadasana, and Adam Schell about Pursuing Happiness. This has been The Mountain Life on KPCW, and we have NPR News coming up next.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
This has been The Mountain Life on KPCW Park City.